Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Back on the show. It's been fun so far talking to a couple of people I like a whole lot. Josh Schertz, the head coach of the Billikens, and Steve Chapman, the CMO, CRO of the St. Louis Blues. We have upcoming Lutz Fan and Steele and Bernie Miklas. Like them both. Love these conversations on Sports on a Sunday Morning. At 11:30, we look back at the greatest offense the league has ever seen, the 1999 St. Louis Rams. 25 years ago, they won the Super Bowl, the only one in our city's history and one of the tremendous moments in St. Louis sports history. Couple of people to keep an eye on in the Super Bowl with local ties. I'm going to tell you about a St. Louisan in just a minute. But former Missouri Tigers Nick Bolton and Charles Harris are one win away from becoming Super Bowl champions. The problem is the only one of them is going to get it. Bolton is in his fourth season with the Chiefs. He is in search of his third consecutive Super Bowl crown. Boy, he has been just a fantastic player. Bolton has started every game for the Chiefs this season. 99 tackles, 3 sacks, an interception, a forced fumble, 6 tackles in the AFC Championship game. He was a great player at Mizzou. First team All-SEC for Missouri in 2019 and 2020. Then he was drafted in the second round by the Chiefs in 2021. As for Harris, Harris is looking for his first ring with the Philadelphia Eagles. He is in his 8th NFL season, played in 9 games this season for the Carolina Panthers with 21 tackles and 3 sacks, and then he was acquired by the Eagles, and he's played in 4 games for Philly this year. He is a Kansas City native, second team All-SEC in 2015 and 2016, first round pick by the Dolphins in 2017, and Bolton is from Frisco, Texas. But from St. Louis, and the only one, by the way, playing in this game who is from St. Louis, do you know who it is? It's Tershawn Wharton, defensive tackle for the Chiefs. 6'1", 280 pounds from right here in St. Louis. He is from U-City. He attended Maplewood Richmond Heights High School for his first 3 seasons. Then he transferred to University City High School as a senior. How good was he as a senior? How about 110 tackles, 4 sacks, and an interception? First team All-Suburban Central Conference. Then he went on to Missouri S&T. That is located in Rolla. And what did he do at Rolla? A Division II program. First team All-Great Lakes Valley Conference. 64 tackles, 13.5 sacks his sophomore season. His junior and senior season, he was at 7.5 sacks both years. First team all GLVC in each season, sophomore, junior, and senior. He finished his collegiate career. This is Tershawn Wharton, the St. Louis native who is playing in the Super Bowl today for the Kansas City Chiefs. Finished his collegiate career 58 tackles for loss and 35.5 sacks. Now, not many people are going to count up Missouri at S&T and get drafted. And he was not drafted. Wharton was signed, however, by the Chiefs as an undrafted free agent April 27, 2020. What a great decision that was by Kansas City. He made the roster out of training camp, made his debut that season, made 2 tackles in a win, and here he is still playing. Now, he tore his ACL in 22. He came roaring back in 23, 21 tackles, 2 sacks, and a fumble recovery. And he had a sack or had a tackle in the Super Bowl last year against the 49ers. But he is back. He is playing for the Chiefs this year. He is the only St. Louisan in the Super Bowl. So somebody to keep an eye on. Number 98, Tershawn Wharton, the defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. Proud to call him one of our own, the U-City native. Heck, I used to live in U-City, Drew. He might well have knocked on our door trick-or-treating for all I know. Back in the day, I might have seen little Tershawn, and now here he is, big time, playing in the Super Bowl. That's pretty cool. I like that a lot. So something to keep an eye on today. Again, I've got the Eagles winning this game, but I'm not hating on the Chiefs. I still go back to something that Larry Fitzgerald told me on this very show, Sports on a Sunday Morning, where he said, you know, I always told him I root for the underdog cities. I look for the cities who – haven't won that have suffered, Buffalo, and a more tortured extent, Cleveland. They don't get to do anything football-wise, although Ohio State just won. But that doesn't satisfy Browns fans necessarily. But Fitzgerald said no, actually. Not for me. He said, I root for and watch and enjoy the dynasties. And he likes the teams that exude greatness and that stay great and create their moment in time for history. And the Chiefs certainly are accomplishing that. So if the Chiefs do win this football game, I think that the respect for a team that has won three in a row will be and should be immense. There will be haters, and that's fine. It's usually directed towards the fan base. You know, the Cardinals went through this. Not that they won three championships in a row. They won one in 06. They had been to the World Series in 04 prior, but they went to the World Series in 04, went to the World Series in 06 and won it, went back to the World Series in 11 and won it, and then went to the World Series again in 13 and lost to the Red Sox. That's four World Series trips in a decade. That's a lot. People can get tired of you. I think the Patriots are the best example of it, a team that kept winning and winning, and people hated on them. So Chiefs fans, it comes with the territory. Whether you're a St. Louis-based Chiefs fan, Kansas City, or anywhere else, doesn't matter. It's the team that you chose. It's absolutely fine. It's the NFL. Everybody's picking teams and rooting for a league that is so widespread. But I wouldn't worry about the haters. Just brush it off. You won't worry about it, I know. Go on and celebrate a third straight championship. But I do think you're going to lose today. I think the Eagles are going to win this game today. I think that they have a machine of a team right now. And as good as Mahomes has been, again, don't give him the ball with 2 minutes to go and 7 points or less to make up, because he will make it up or win the game. But if he doesn't get that opportunity and the Eagles are able to put the game away, they will do it because of an excellent offensive line, Saquon Barkley, and Jalen Hurts is going to have to be on his game. He is not even the best Jalen on the field, though. That would be Jalen Carter. The defensive lineman for the Eagles could be a real problem today. I think the Eagles' offensive line is better than the Chiefs' offensive line even, and the Eagles' defensive line will have to try to take advantage of that. These games are won and lost on the line of scrimmage, and I think that's something absolutely to watch today. While everybody talks about Mahomes and Kelce and Barkley and Smith and Brown and all these guys and Hurts, the offensive and defensive lines are what to watch today, along with your calorie intake. It doesn't count today. Just eat and drink all you want, safely, please. Let's take a break. When we come back, Lutz Fan and Steel, Sporting Director, St. Louis City SC on KMOX. All right, let's get into it. Chris Durkin with Jen Cease.
I just saw you at the MAC Trophy Awards, which was awesome to see you and your wife there. I know it's not the same as being in season, but did it stir a little bit of, like, it's getting ready to get started with that kind of award that happens in St. Louis?
Yeah, I never knew that it was there. It was exciting, for sure. Kind of felt imposter syndrome because I never really played college soccer. So
that would be really unusual for somebody to be there as a pro at top levels in a game and, by the way, can feel like that.
Yeah. No, it's just because it was an award for college soccer, and I'm the guy there that hasn't played college soccer.
Took a different path.
and I'm happy with my path, but it was funny. I really didn't know as much about that side of it as I did, but when I was there, it was actually really fun to see everything.
And I understand, I was just kind of listening to the latest updates, and you're not 100% yet, but close?
Close, yeah. We're trending in the right direction. Just started to get him on the field and pass the ball around, feeling strong. Yeah, really excited to get back into it.
I tore both knees, I've torn an ankle before, and one of the parts that rehab sucks, it's boring, you're isolated sometimes from the team, but I found sometimes I think I learned a bit more about myself in those injuries. What have you learned through injury that will make you a better player?
Yeah, well, I would go back to the saying that, you know, people come back stronger from their injuries. I think I always thought that they came back stronger physically, you know, they put more work into it, but mentally I think is where you make those gains. For me, it's just the hunger associated with being back on the field, being grateful for every day that you get to step on that field. You know, maybe it just gets lost in the monotony of every day. It feels like this is normal, but no, it's not normal. It's a blessing to be on the field, and I'm just going to be so grateful when I lace up the boots, get back out there with the guys, and really cherish those moments.
Been through changes with the team. The team's seen a lot of changes in 3 years. Coach Olaf, he brings his own fine resume as a center back, top of his game as well. When it comes to him leading the team and you kind of training but being a little bit on the outside looking in, what have you seen the most with his interaction with the team that excites you?
Yeah, I think, you know, he definitely has an aura and a presence that demands respect. And I think his resume doesn't lie. He's been at the highest levels and he has a habits and knowledge of what it's like to be there. And he does a good job of imparting that on everybody else. And he has the same standards, I would say, that he had for himself, he has for us. So I think that's fantastic for the group. I think that having a center back who sees everything from behind up, I think is beneficial, him understanding that. So I think we've lacked a bit of defensive structure, especially in the past year, just allowing too many goals. So I think he'll bring a lot more stability.
He's said more than once, talking about nonstop players, and I chuckle because I'm like, Chris Durkin is always a nonstop player. But I wonder sometimes if he's not just talking about the fact that it's physical, but mentally dialed in, like never losing that mental focus. What are your thoughts on nonstop players from that perspective?
Yeah, I think he's really harped on the fact that the players that play at the best level are focused for 90 plus minutes, and those lapses in focus cause goals, mistakes, and that's what we want to try and eliminate, because that means losses. So I think the constant attention on being nonstop in everything that we do, I think, is a really valuable goal to achieve.
That is Chris Durkin. I think he's a fascinating personality and very good talent for this City team. Jen Cease doing a nice job there, and City pulled out a 1-1 tie with Austin Saturday in preseason play. Thomas Totland had the goal in the 88th minute for City as they win in the Coachella Valley Invitational. That is part of their preseason right now. They're going to play Wednesday against New York City FC. Here is City SC's Miguel Perez, the hometown product. Let's take a listen.
Great to see you again. How does it feel to be back?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more excited to be back in St. Louis. I mean, it's just unbelievable to be back.
It's hard to go away, right? But there are lessons that you learn when you go away and you play somewhere else. What were the things that you worked on that you're coming back with City and training with the first team again, that you feel like you're bringing back to your game that you didn't maybe have a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, last year, I mean, it was tough for me just going down there and not playing as much. But since I'm back now, I think just having confidence in going in and playing what I can do, to be able to showcase on what I can do on the field and off the field, I'd say just living on my own and coming back it's good now.
Particular skills or tactics or techniques that you feel like you've worked on not being with the team, bringing back, that like this is what I can insert into my game that I didn't really have maybe in year one with the team?
Going down there, I mean, I've for sure learned a lot, just being what it takes to be a pro. Just coming back, I think I can showcase a lot what I learned down there, and I'm going to do what I can here in St. Louis.
All right, for all the little guys who are dreaming of being a pro, you've been there. You've had to kind of work on things. What's your message to little kids dreaming big?
Ever since I was young, I had dreamed to become a professional soccer player, but just go out there and work hard. Keep going. I mean, so you can train more than once a day. So I think just going out there working hard and do your best.
Thought about asking about your mental focus. I heard Coach Olaf talk a few times about having nonstop players. And I don't think he's talking about just being physically fit, but saying mentally tuned into the game the entire time. Do you do anything at practices, between, or in games where you try to make sure you're tuned in mentally?
I mean, once the ball goes out of bounds, free kick, foul, I mean, I think I'm just looking up, getting behind the ball, and just make sure I'm focused for the next action. I mean, there's 90 minutes of the game, and you can't reflect off one mistake you have. So I think this focus on the next action is going to be huge.
That is Miguel Perez with Jen Cease. Very nice job there talking to the homegrown product about a number of things, being back in St. Louis, what he's done while he's been away, his advice to some youth players, and talking about nonstop players right there. Coach Olaf Melberg has talked about that. Focus on the next action is what he has told his players, and Miggy is taking that to heart. There's also this very nice job by City to do this. They are actually putting a Super Bowl ad out there today. So when you watch the big game tonight, you are going to see a commercial from St. Louis City SC. It is a strategic ad placement, part of a larger initiative, a regional ad, initiative by Major League Soccer to promote the league during the Super Bowl. This is a smart move. The ad will air today on Fox 2 while you're watching the game. The team says it will highlight the electrifying atmosphere at Energizer Park. The viewers here in St. Louis will get a glimpse of what that looks like, as City has experienced a lot of it in 2 years. And now, believe it or not, we are 2 weeks away, less than two, before the February 22nd home opener against the Colorado Rapids. Diego Giuliani, the president and GM of City, says, quote, "We are beyond excited to be a part of this innovative initiative. This game is consistently the most watched TV event in the United States, and having the opportunity to bring further awareness of our club and our incredible fans to the broader St. Louis audience is an opportunity we could not pass up. We hope this ad will resonate with viewers and invite more St. Louisans to experience the passion of St. Louis City SC." I like that, more St. Louisans, because yes, there will be people that are going to travel in for these games, but for right now, if you're listening to this station, you are in the St. Louis area most likely, and if you have not been to a City game, it's probably time to do that. It is a phenomenal experience, really outside the stadium before you go in to Energizer Park, but MLS across the board is growing. And a lot of these teams are trying to capitalize on this sort of attention. And so they are buying this ad, the partnering, and putting it on the Super Bowl broadcast. And think about this. I mean, is there ever going to be a bigger time for soccer in this country than next year when the World Cup is here in North America? So St. Louis City SC is likely to host one of those teams. They will train here, I would imagine, this incredible building that's just blocks away from where we're sitting here at KMOX in downtown St. Louis, about $1 billion complex. What an incredible opportunity that would be for a World Cup team to be here. So really an exciting time. Well, it was an exciting time 25 years ago, right around this time. We had a parade. We had a celebration. We had the top of the world to look forward to. St. Louis and the NFL. The Super Bowl champions, St. Louis Rams. The Lombardi Trophy was ours and is ours forever. When we come back, we'll relive the greatest show on turf. I'm Tom Ackerman. This is KMOX.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
We are back, sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. We're going to get into the greatest show on turf in just a moment. The Cardinals have announced, bringing back, here's a throwback, a name from the past. Rob Kaminsky has signed a minor league contract for the 2025 season. If that name rings a bell, he was their first-round pick in 2013. He made his MLB debut in 2020. Rob Kaminsky has signed a minor league deal with the Cardinals as they continue to sign a few names here and there. You know, why not give it a shot? Cardinals Player Development sending that out on their Twitter page, their X page, Cards Player Dev. I would highly recommend that's a good follow, especially with this group that is running things right now. I would think they're going to be even more active. I have said that the Cardinals need to be more transparent, but also as active as possible with their fans, especially those who do follow the prospects, the signings. Now, in the case of Kaminsky, he is someone who's been around for a while, and so is this one. This was announced a day or two ago. Nick Anderson was signed by the Cardinals to a minor league contract with a non-roster invite to spring training. Anderson's 34 years old. He's a right-hander, appeared in 165 games across five major league seasons. He debuted in 2019. Career ERA of 3.18 and a 31.6% strikeout percentage. That's pretty good. They have also, you know, announced a few things here and there about adding some pieces. And Adam Wainwright predicted that they would actually add some pieces here pretty soon. In fact, let me go to that before we talk about the greatest show. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, this is Adam Wainwright. So I talked to him about the Cardinals and his thought on this current plan. Here he is.
If it was as simple as going out and if you if you sign the best player, you're going to win no matter what, then golly, I mean, that would be an obvious decision, right? Go out and sign the best player. But it's so hard to win. I mean, the Dodgers just won the World Series title this last year, but they've won the division I don't know how many years in a row. They've been in the playoffs I don't know how many years in a row since we were back in 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, when I feel like we had the best team in baseball in 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15, and we only won one of those. And one of those, we missed the playoffs entirely. So it's just not an easy thing.
This is Adam Wainwright with me saying it's not an easy thing to win. Here he is on the Cardinals' plan.
I know they have a plan. I know sometimes those plans aren't always what the fans want to see. The fans want to see the best players put out there to give them the best chance to win. I want to see that too, man. I hope they go out and sign all the players. But that's just not how the business model works. That's not how their model's working. I do think that they're going to try to pull off a couple of things before spring training, but I also don't know that. I'm not in it. You know, I wish I was more in it to know these answers when people ask me, but I have immense respect for Mo and Mr. DeWitt and the plan that they put in place. I think Mo's going to be, you know, borderline Hall of Fame general manager when you look back at his career and what he was able to do.
That's Adam Wainwright on KMOX. Now, he and Mo obviously are very close, but he's not far off. I know John Mozeliak gets a ton of criticism, but Mozeliak's body of work, Organization of the Year, Executive of the Year, he's had some very good moments in his career as his career winds down here. Normally does join us at 11:30, was unable to do so. He and I texted yesterday. His schedule just didn't allow it today, but we certainly will reconnect with him as baseball begins this week. Pitchers and catchers report. Matt Pauly's heading down there tomorrow. Mike Claiborne is there already. Ricky Horton will be there. John Rooney. We're going to have a number of people reporting back to us from spring training. And the games start February 22nd when the Cardinals take on the Marlins at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium. And I thought some good stuff there from Adam Wainwright just to put it in perspective as to where the Cardinals situation is right now. You can hear that full interview on our Total Information AM podcast page at KMOX.com. Well, 25 years ago, the journey was one game from completion. And we all know the story by now, even if you weren't born when the Rams won the Super Bowl, which is still hard for me to believe, but it 25 years goes by fast. I was there with the team starting in 97. I saw them in 97, 98 struggle to gain traction. Dick Vermeil had taken over as coach and just could never get it going. Remember the Tony Banks saga and all the issues they drafted Lawrence Phillips. And it just, you know, this was a team that just could not get going. And then in 1999, it was like a dream. It all came together. Mike Martz was your offensive coordinator. Trent Green was your quarterback. Marshall Faulk was signed and was traded for. They brought him in from the Indianapolis Colts. And you had Isaac Bruce, who had already a strong start to his career. They drafted Torrey Holt. They had Orlando Pace. They had some pieces on defense. And then the dream became a nightmare. In the preseason, taking on the Chargers when Rodney Harrison ran into the leg of Green, the St. Louis kid, and tore his knee out for the season. They turned it over to Kurt Warner, and I remember that morning at Rams Park when he pounded on the table, Dick Vermeil did, and said, "We'll rally around Kurt Warner, we will play good football." I was there sitting just a few feet from Coach Vermeil when he said that very thing. A number of us were. And the season just was unlike anything I had ever covered or will. They took the league by storm. They had everybody on their heels. They burst out to a tremendous start to the season. I remember they lost that Halloween game at Tennessee, and that would be a little something to come because they would get the Titans again after beating the Vikings in the playoffs, edging the Bucs in the NFC Championship game. They played in Atlanta on January 30th, 2000 against the Titans. And this game, wouldn't you know it, was tied after an early lead for the Rams. The Titans came back and tied the game until, under 2 minutes to go on Westwood One, Kurt Warner under center.
Warner and the Rams, who have gone three and out, back-to-back possessions. They go under center with three receivers to the right, one to the left. Warner back to throw. airs it out. Deep down the right side, and the pass is caught by Isaac Bruce. He breaks away at the 30. Bruce to the 20. Bruce to the 10. Touchdown. Touchdown, St. Louis Rams. Isaac Bruce, 73 yards. And the St. Louis Rams, for the moment, have the lead.
It was an incredible catch by Bruce. A great throw by Warner with a lot of air under it, but Bruce adjusted, made the catch, got by two defenders, and just snaked his way to the end zone. 73 yards for the score, and the Rams had the lead 23-16, but there was work to do. The great Steve McNair, the late Steve McNair, playing for the Titans, and this team was not going to give an inch. They actually took it down, and this game came down to inches. Final play, call, Howard David, Westwood 1.
Shotgun for McNair. Takes the snap, looks to the right, throws, and is complete to Tyson at the one-yard line, and he stops short. The clock strikes 000. Kevin Dyson caught the ball, and Mike Jones made the tackle at the one-yard line to preserve a win for the St. Louis Rams in Super Bowl 34.
The greatest tackle in NFL history, one of the greatest games in NFL history, the St. Louis Rams Super Bowl champions. John Dockery of Westwood won on the field with Isaac Bruce.
I never doubted that we were going to win this game. Tennessee definitely deserved to be here. They gave us all we could handle. It was a fight to the finish, one of the best games I've ever played in.
On the podium, Mike Tirico with Georgia Frontier.
Please take this Lombardi Trophy home to St. Louis. Share it with your great fans there and around the nation.
Georgia, what does it mean to you, someone who is a native of St. Louis, who grew up in St. Louis, brought pro football back to St. Louis, to bring the city its first pro football championship? What does it mean?
I'm so thrilled. I'm thrilled for St. Louis. I'm thrilled for the Rams. And it proves that we did the right thing in going to St. Louis. This trophy. Belongs to our coach, our team, and our fans in St. Louis.
Yes, it does. And it came to St. Louis, all right. A massive parade down Market Street, Frontier, and the ownership and the management and the players looked back at them with pride.
I miss St. Louis. I'm so happy to be back. And I can't tell you, I haven't been to sleep. But you're so wonderful. I love you, and I'm so happy to be back and bring my team to my people. Thank you.
What a time that was. That was a cold day, too, and people were packed downtown to watch the St. Louis Rams come home and lift the Lombardi Trophy. It was unthinkable. I mean, for years, the St. Louis Cardinals never hosted a playoff game. Through all those years, even those great teams in the 1970s, when St. Louis was a football town. And here they were back again with an NFL team, and no doubt it was an NFL town. This team took over everything. They were bigger than the Cardinals, bigger than the Blues, bigger than anything you could imagine at that time. They were a rock concert everywhere they went. And they won the Super Bowl in 1999, finishing the deal in Atlanta over the Tennessee Titans. What an amazing, amazing time that was. Actually went back to the Super Bowl 2 years later in New Orleans, lost to the Patriots in Tom Brady's first Super Bowl victory. It really started what became a slow decline, even though they came back strong at 03. They couldn't get back there in 03. Had they won that Super Bowl, who knows, against the Patriots? Perhaps they're still here. Maybe they become a dynasty. It's just, you know, we'll never really know. But you can embrace the 1999 season and know that they did it. Those of us who witnessed it will never, ever forget it. We'll come back. Bernie Miklas joins us on KMOX. Our visit with Bernie Miklas, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Bernie Miklas, how are you on this Super Bowl Sunday?
I'm doing great. You know, going to just enjoy the day. I hope it's a great game. I have a feeling it will be. And also, of course, looking forward to later in the week players and catchers reporting players and pitchers, sorry, reporting to Jupiter, Florida for the opening of spring training.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that, too. As soon as this game is over, my attention goes to that and college basketball and hockey and soccer and all the things that are about to happen all at once. But certainly, I think it'd be a fun day. And I just reminisced about the greatest show on turf. Quick story. I was 24. So this is 1990. Yeah, I was 24 years old and was asked to anchor our coverage from the downtown studios. If the Rams won, we were going to know that downtown was going to be crazy. So I anchored all of our coverage from here. What an honor that was. But I was, when Isaac Bruce scored on that 73-yard touchdown, I was in the middle of a pile of friends in an apartment in U City. And when Jones made the tackle, I ran out the door, got in my car, raced downtown. And when the network coverage ended, we started with local coverage here. And it was just an amazing night. I know that you, like I did, covered that team from start to finish, Bernie.
Absolutely. You know what? I was doing, and this kind of hooks it into the fact that Super Bowl Sunday. You know what I was doing real late the last couple nights, and I would advise fans who want to get into the nostalgia of the '99 Rams and just appreciate all over again how great it was. Just go to YouTube, not YouTube TV or not anybody's particular YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search 1999 Rams. There is so much on there. I mean, you can watch, I'll just leave it at that. I watch the NFL films, like 1 hour show about the 1999 Rams, and relived all those great wins and all those great players and all these incredible plays. And, you know, it's 25 years later, Tom, and I don't mean to dwell on this too long, but one thing I kind of forgot about was how great that Rams defense was. You know, they had seven pick sixes that year, seven. And we're second in the league in sacks, you know, second in the league in terms of the opponent passer rating. My point being is, like, we associate the greatest show turf, greatest show on turf Rams with offense, as we should. But they had one heck of a defense. I mean, really outstanding. And I think those guys kind of get overlooked in history.
I'm so glad that you said that. I remember getting into an argument, like one of those sports bar arguments, you know, where I said, well, they don't win the Super Bowl without defense. Guys like, oh, you're crazy. What are you talking about? They were all offense. I'm like, no, actually, if you go back and look, I mean, I covered the team. Their defense was excellent. So I appreciate that, Bernd.
Yeah, that season they were fourth in fewest points allowed. They led the league in defensive touchdowns. They had seven pick sixes. They were sixth in takeaways. They had the second most interceptions. They only allowed 19 touchdown passes, but they picked off 29. They were tied first in sacks. I mean, on and on and on and on. So anybody who says they didn't have a good defense is wrong. Be incorrect. I was gonna say something nastier, but I bit my tongue.
That's all right. So. Drew would have bleeped you. they literally won the Super Bowl on a defensive play.
Right.
Mike Jones
right.
making the tackle. What an amazing time that was. I think the Chiefs have gotten to this point actually because of defense. They are an excellent. We all know about Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, great offensive mind. They get the job done. They always seem to find a way. But they're not here without their defense, I don't think.
I totally agree, because it just wouldn't have happened if this had been a bad defense, because the Chiefs have not been able to outscore teams that would have put up a lot of points on their own defense had the defense been terrible. Listen, if the Chiefs win today, especially, I would make a case, and I don't think I'm wrong, and I don't think I'm being a homer, because he was a head coach in St. Louis, Steve Spagnuolo. This would be his fifth Super Bowl ring as a defensive coordinator in the NFL. And to me, he coached the all-time masterpiece, the 2007 season against the Patriots. The Giants were a 12.5-point underdog, and they were averaging the Patriots were averaging coming in about 37 points per game. So the Giants, as a 12.5-point underdog, they got in Brady's face all day because of the pass rush package that Spags put together. And a team that averaged 37 points per game during the season, he held them to 14 points. It's the greatest single game Super Bowl coaching performance defensively of all time. So if he gets a fifth, especially if he gets a fifth Super Bowl, how can he not be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
No, I agree.
Seriously,
and, right? And, yeah, and if he goes in, Jim Hanifin should be in.
Don't you think?
Yeah, and I agree with that, but it's like it's Spags had has a coordinator title. So when you talk mm-hmm. to the greatest offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators in the Super Bowl era, there has not been a better defensive coordinator than Steve Spagnuolo, who's coordinated defenses for two different teams that won at least to right now a total of 4 Super Bowls.
No, amen to that. If the Chiefs win, it will be because two things: they contained Saquon Barkley, didn't let him break one, and secondly, they got into Jalen Hurts' head, because those blitzes, Bernie, if Spags is able to just slightly disrupt his timing, they should be okay. But easier said than done. The Eagles have some serious firepower.
You know, and again, I'm not trying to put everything on Steve Spagnuolo, but it's interesting if you look at his postseason history, as I did. I studied it. So he's had 18 games as the Chiefs defensive coordinator in the postseason, 18 games. The most a running back has ever gained against his defense is 89 yards in a game. And if you add the Giants games to it, he would have 23 total games as a defensive coordinator in the postseason. Only one time has a back ran for more than 100 yards against his defense. So he kind of comes up with some stuff to do the best he can to negate a guy like Barkley. Let's see if he can get it done. I don't know. And I listen, the other thing too is his blitz packages and his creativity, and he comes up with stuff that they're like diabolical. They don't even use this stuff in the regular season, but then when the postseason starts, he saves it. He's got it in his pocket for these crazy blitzes. And Warren Sharp, who's one of the great football data analysts of all time, he came up with a thing this week where it showed where when Jalen Hurts is pressured he's pressured to throw. When he's under, and I'm not talking about scrambling. I'm talking about, when he throws the ball, when he's being pressured, he was the worst quarterback in the NFL this year. And I know that sounds crazy, but Warren Sharp laid it all out. I mean, he's got the facts. And the only other thing, I agree with what you said. The only other thing I would add to that, the Chiefs this season in terms of red zone opportunities, and they had a lot of them, the percentage of red zone opportunities where they score a touchdown, it was the lowest percentage of Mahomes' career. And Vic Fangio is his entire career as a defensive coordinator, now with Philadelphia, his defenses have been in the top 4 or 5, like every single season, in denying touchdowns in the red zone. So the Chiefs will get down there, but will they have to settle for field goals? I mean, I think that's a huge battleground in this game, the red zone, when the Chiefs have the ball.
I agree with you. I think that's a great breakdown. Let me give you one more topic, if you would. And we got 2 minutes left. So we're at the 2 minute clock. It's running. Why isn't Torrey Holt in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Oh my gosh. 2 minutes. Number one, they changed the rules. So it's much more harder for a modern era candidate. Like, don't be confused the fact that Sterling Sharp got in. Him getting in had nothing to do with Torrey Holt being excluded, because Sharp was a senior committee nominee. So he got in based on that. But they changed the rules. They're going to make it much harder for modern era candidates to get in. They thought that, the committee was putting in 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, a long, long time. Like, all 5 would make it that got to the finalist. So by putting in the new rules, it's really harder for candidates to get the votes they need. And I won't go into the weeds on that, but it's harder to get the necessary votes. So basically what happened is that not only Torrey Holt, who was a finalist for the 6th time, but Reggie Wayne, finalist for the 6th time, I believe that they canceled each other out. They both got a lot of votes, but because it's much harder to clear that bar now, I think they canceled each other out. My fear is that Torrey Holt is going to kind of slip through the cracks, because this Hall of Fame keeps changing the rules all the time.
It's tough, but I approve. That's actually a really good analysis. It makes me feel a little more understanding. Still angry.
You should be.
Yeah. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. I hope you have a great. What do you got? What are we cooking up tonight?
You know, mostly stuff that we went out and bought. I mean, although we're making some pasta, but we're going to have the usual. We're going to have like dollar roll sandwiches, chicken wings. We've got all kinds of dips.
Yes.
Yeah, we're all over it.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you. Great stuff. We'll see you on the Gas House Gang tomorrow.
Have fun.
That's Bernie Miklas. Subscribe to his YouTube channel, The Bernie Show. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning.